in the cap and trade Caribbean.
We're going to start with our work session on
yes.
Senate Bill 1565 for purposes of moving it over to the Ways and Means Committee. Senator Findley.
Thank you. Chair Hass.
I make a motion to refer Senate Bill 1565 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Findley moves to refer Senate Bill 1565 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. It has no amendments. Is there discussion, Senator Riley?
No. Can we send that maybe with a recommendation?
Yes, I think you want to.
And what about going to the floor?
The floor.
With the subsequent referral, at least.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. What are we doing? I don't know what we're doing.
It's a different phraseology, but I think we know what we mean.
And then afterwards, go to the floor.
I have no idea.
The correct way would, I suppose, say send it to the floor with referral to the Ways and Means Committee. We'll do
correct.
That with a due pass recommendation.
That's what
discussion?
Thank you, Dennis.
I guess I do need
objections? Seeing none. Senate Bill 1565 will go to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Thanks, Muzzin. That was great.
Good job, Muzzin.
I didn't have
any listening. Yeah, Senator Beyer Carrier.
But all right, I'm going to open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1541. This is a bill brought to us by Senator Knope and others, and we'll first get a summary from Jamie.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1541 deals with properties that are held by individuals 68 years or older, and proposes a property tax freeze for purposes of assessed value. And I can continue, or I can let Senator Knope describe the bill. So this would be a program that would work for individuals and their properties that would otherwise qualify for the what's known as the Senior and Disabled Property Tax Deferral Program that is administered by the Department of Revenue, but for the situation that they have a reverse mortgage on their home. And that program excludes, for the most part, properties entering with reverse mortgages. And then the additional condition on this particular program with the property tax freeze, which would mean that your assessed value would remain the same, would be that instead of being 62 years and older, this program would require you to be 68 years and older.
Okay, and we don't have a revenue estimate yet.
We don't.
Okay, Senator Tim Knope.
Thank you, Chair Hass, Vice Chair Findley, members of the committee, State Senator Tim Knope, Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. And this morning, you are hearing the bill that I have teamed up with others on to freeze property taxes for low-income seniors. And with ever-increasing values in assessment in Deschutes County, as well as ever-increasing prices on necessities like food and prescription drugs and the like, many people have said that they're getting to a stress level as it relates to this issue and having to determine what they're actually going to be able to pay and afford. And so I tried to come up with a solution that was not overly impactful of budgets for our public entities and tried to tailor this to a very narrow group that I think would benefit the most, and that would be low-income seniors. And so in order to not create a second program, we tried to mirror the deferral program that's already in place. So the goal is to allow low-income seniors of a certain age to either do the reverse, or to do the deferral program, or to do the property tax freeze, or both. But it didn't make sense to me that if somebody was going to be deferring their taxes, that we would also continue to increase those taxes. In other words, dig the hole deeper for them so there's more to pay later on. That didn't make a lot of sense to me. So this was the very narrow solution that we came up with, very targeted, hopefully, to make an impact on those who are most in need. I think there is a dash one amendment that helps in terms of constitutionality of this particular bill, and be happy to answer those questions that I can.
Senator Canope, is there a cap on the value of the home in here?
I want to say the cap is $500,000 in the...
These are individuals and their properties that would otherwise qualify for the senior deferral program, and that one has a cap. And if you remember, Senator Finley had a bill last year that dealt with that cap, and it's often around $250,000 in smaller communities, but then it escalates for property values that are in urban areas. So there's...
It was a formula, right?
Yeah, it's a formulaic cap. But the average of properties in the senior deferral program is around $250,000.
Okay, thank you. And that's not spelled out in the bill, but it's spelled out in the where it points to the
formula is in the bill.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have somebody signed up here, Mark Garst from the League of Cities.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the League of Oregon Cities. I'm very sympathetic to the plight of these seniors. In my previous role, I got to answer a lot of phone calls. It would often be after bonds passed, seniors would see spikes in their property taxes, and they would call the Department of Revenue looking for help. The Department of Revenue does have the senior deferral program that's available for a lot of these folks. And what this bill seeks to do is to help folks who cannot qualify for the senior deferral program because they have a reverse mortgage. So very sympathetic to the position that these folks are in. I think that it's sad that our property tax system is broken. The League has been a champion of trying to fix the property tax system. There are limitations on rates. There are limitations on the base. And it really limits the ability of the locals to do any kind of targeted relief for anyone. It's a broad relief, property tax relief program that we have in the state of Oregon. Everybody basically has almost a freeze. Their assessed values are limited to increases of 3%. And so I think that we could do a little bit better job as a state of figuring out, you know, where folks are actually in need and targeting some relief that way, but not until we get meaningful property tax reform. Some seniors are paying more than their share under our current system. Some seniors are probably paying less than their share under our current system. If you look at Portland, there are rapidly gentrified areas of inner Northeast and Southeast Portland where people are paying on just a fraction of their real market value. You look east of 82nd Avenue, other parts of the city, and folks are paying almost full boat, almost close to real market value. And sadly, this is the area that a lot of these folks were pushed when gentrification happened in inner Northeast and Southeast Portland. So I think that there's really a racial equity component here. So, you know, the League's been a champion of property tax reform. We'll continue to work on that. It's been one of our priorities year after year. My predecessor pushed that rock up the hill. Her predecessor pushed that rock up the hill. And I would not be surprised if I end up trying to push that rock up the hill in a future session, probably sooner rather than later. I really thought that we'd addressed a lot of this issue in 2019. The legislature came in last session and they allowed a lot of seniors with reverse mortgages to get into the senior deferral program. There are some limitations there. So You have to have gotten the reverse mortgage between 2011 and 2016. So this bill would allow folks prior to 2011 and after 2017 and after to get in, right? What we heard from the bill proponents last year was that the relief was not as necessary after 2017 because there were some changes in how reverse mortgages were underwritten, and there's an ability now for those folks to actually pay. Prior to 2011, we may still have some issues there, but a lot of those folks were in the senior deferral program and are grandfathered in as a result of action that the legislature took to let people who had been in the program before the reverse mortgage prohibition happened stay in the reverse mortgage program. And that happened over the course of a few different years. There's also an equity requirement, 40% in the bill from last session. So this would allow some folks who might have less equity into the deferral program. I don't know what the revenue impact, I'll be very curious what the revenue impact is on this. It may not be that significant. I mean, it may not be such a huge hit to locals, in which case we might be less concerned about it. But I think that the way that we'd rather see this addressed is to work on getting more people into the deferral program if that's a problem that these people can't get in. And, you know, in my prior role, Senator Finley in his prior job, we worked together to try and get more people into the deferral program. And I think we still have some work to do there, especially in rural areas of the state. But I think that that's how we would rather see this addressed. Otherwise, you create this weird situation where people who take out reverse mortgages get a benefit that people who don't take out reverse mortgages don't get. And it just feels kind of weird. It doesn't seem very equitable, I guess. Another way that you might look to address this problem is through circuit breakers. A lot of states, and maybe 18 states now, have a circuit breaker program where if your property taxes get above a certain percentage of your income and you're senior or disabled, you can get some relief that way through the general fund, through the state revenues. That might be another way to address this. And I'd be happy to have that conversation as well. But in a system where local jurisdictions have so little ability to raise revenue, and it seems like we're constantly kind of seeing pressures on that money. Imagine if the state had to live with a 3% base increase, that'd be tough. And our costs don't increase at 3%. So it just is, it's tough. And I completely understand the plight of these folks, and I'm happy to work with anybody on, you know, ways to address it. But we just can't support this way at this point. But we will be looking at the revenue impact. So thank you.
Your questions are more ours. Mark, there are a few people who know more about this and property taxes in general than you. Thanks for your testimony. I do have kind of a global question for you on the deferrals. It's still 6%.
Is it still
the deferral?
The interest rate? Yeah, I think that's right. And it's not compounded. It's a simple rate at this point, I think. But so, yeah.
So I just continue to wonder, with rates now coming back down closer to 3%, why is there still a demand for this if they can do much better in a bank or a credit union?
So our Chair Hass, our rates are not tied to the market. And I think that, you know, right now we look like a pretty bad option, but I think that we're kind of a lender of last resort. When you go to get a traditional mortgage, they're going to look at your ability to repay. And here it's almost the opposite. If you have a less of an ability to repay, there's a greater chance that you're going to be allowed into the program. We expect the state's goal is to recoup at the end, you know, when the senior passes on, ages out of the program, or makes a move. And so that's how that program works. It doesn't, yeah. But I don't know, there could be work to be done there, but I'd be a little nervous about tying it to rates, because when rates go up, then you would, yeah.
I'm not saying I have a solution there. It just seems like, you know, especially some of the seniors, why they might not have a strong credit rate or ability to pay, but they have a lot of equity in their home, and it, you know, their ratios would be good. Anyway, it's a discussion for another day. So, thank you. That's all, Senator Riley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I think that we really have a lot of work to do in the deferrals in general, without hitting on individuals. I think that we need to really work on the whole program. instead of, you know, bit piecing it together. I'm on this, I'm signed on to this bill, but I really believe that we really need to step back and really look at the whole referral program.
Signed up on this, so I'm going to close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1541. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill, I'm sorry, on, yes, Senate Bill 1531. And this is the technical fix on general revenue that we had yesterday. We still had some people who wanted to testify yesterday. We ran out of time. So if they are here today, we'll take them up. So let's start with Deanna Mack.
To the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack with the Department of Revenue, and I am here to talk about one specific provision, the Section 8 of the introduced bill, I believe it's Section 11 in the amendments, related to interest. It seems we're deleting the word on in that bill, and there's a very important reason why we are, and I wanted to explain that to you. In 2017, we came to this committee with Senate Bill 33, and we asked for you to change the way interest was calculated from monthly or fraction of a month thereof to a daily rate, so we could use it in our new computer system, and we could, you know, kind of align with what the rest of the world was doing in calculating interest on a daily basis. That was the intent of the bill. Somehow, in that process, so during some amendments, we aligned it with some other statutes related to our lodging tax and 911. Somehow the word on was inserted in the statute. None of us caught it until a few months ago. But what it did, instead of aligning the statutes, you know, the 911 and the lodging tax with our general one, it created an inadvertent policy change. With one we didn't discuss in legislative history, we had no intent to change it, and it actually created inequities between taxpayers and also between tax programs. So what I wanted to explain was, under the old law, prior to Senate Bill 33, we had 45 days from either the due date of the return or the date, 45 days from the date the tax was paid, whichever was later. Now we have 45 days from the due date only. So if the tax was paid after the due date, which does happen, some people don't pay timely, then you know, they think that they're gonna owe with their return when they file an extension perhaps, and then they end up filing for a refund claim. That's the kind of the scenario that we see. So in that case, interest begins accruing as of the date the tax was paid because of the insertion of the word on. So we no longer have 45-day grace period. So I've got an example for you on the screen over here. The interest, so if for example, if a taxpayer makes a $2,000 payment on May 18th with extension, and then they end up October 1st filing a claim for refund of $1,000, we process the refund, we issue it. In the example under, if you can scroll that up a little bit, Austin. In the example, you can see the way the current law, or the old law and the current law. So if 45 days from the due date is May 30th, and the later those two dates under the old law, the prior to Senate Bill 33, it would have been July 2nd. So under the law post Senate Bill 33, we have a difference in the dates between May 30th and May 18th. So what that means is in the outcome of that is that there's basically 34 more days of interest being paid on the refund than there should have been under the old law. Now, I know you're probably thinking, well, this kind of makes sense. Why wouldn't it be like this? Why shouldn't it be like this? And the reason that it needs to be corrected is simple, because it treats taxpayers who file timely and pay timely different than taxpayers who don't. And so, for example, a person who files a return on time on, you know, by April 15th and makes a claim for refund, they will never get interest if we process the return in less than 45 days. So a person who files late, or excuse me, pays late, will. And so that's an inequity. And then it also corrects the inequity between the different tax programs that we created inadvertently. So we wanted to ask you to support, you know, making this correction since it was inadvertent during the original session and we just discovered it. The rest of the bill we're neutral on. We don't really have any concerns. However, there is a technical fix we're working with LRO on and the film and video and HEC on related to the tax credit auctions for how they work for fiscal year filers. And we're working on how that will get into place. So, but that otherwise we are neutral on the remainder of the bill. So if you have any questions.
Thank you. So you want to go back to 2018?
Yes.
Wouldn't you have thousands of refunds that would be like $2 or 80 cents or something?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know the count exactly, and I know we're still working on the final revenue estimate, but we didn't actually identify this issue until just recently, and so we would need to correct our systems to go back, and it would have a potential cost if we did not make this change today to the interest calculations. We'd have to issue refunds for interest only. Yeah.
Even though many of them would be tiny?
Well, it depends on the value of it, but yeah, they could make a claim for anything over a dollar.
Wouldn't automatically identify them and send out.
It depends on the amount, Mr. Chair. We might, depends on if it's large enough. But again, it was just not something that we discussed or intended to have occur, and it created some inequities, and that's why we're here to try and get it fixed.
Questions on this point?
Okay.
Thank you.
Janet Byrd.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Janet Byrd. I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships. Neighborhood Partnership, and I've also submitted written testimony, so I won't read it word for word, but I want to go through this with you. We are the administrator on behalf of Oregon Housing and Community Services of the Oregon Individual Development Account Initiative. As you know, those of you especially who were here last session, the Oregon IDA initiative helps Oregonians with low incomes across the state achieve their financial dreams by offering matched savings coupled with coaching and support to manage the complexity of buying a home, making an investment in education, starting a business, or reaching another goal. Since its inception in 1999, the Oregon IDA initiative has been funded by a state tax income tax credit. Since that time, the tax credit mechanism allowed us to leverage state resources effectively, with a high of 2018 when we sold $7.5 million of tax credits for $10.8 million. Because donors typically claimed both a state tax credit and a federal charitable deduction, we were able to raise $1.44 of resources for the initiative with each tax dollar foregone. After the 2017 Federal Tax Cut and Jobs Act limited state and local tax deductions, several states issued new tax credits. In reaction, in August of 2018, an IRS regulation was issued which stated that money received in return for state tax credits could not also be deducted as a charitable contribution on federal taxes. That rule, which was temporary on August 18th of 2018 and permanent in June of 2019, has made the Oregon IDA tax credit a dramatically less viable funding mechanism to use to achieve state goals. We are very grateful for the time and energy that this committee and the House Revenue Committee spent discussing the IDA initiative and possible structural changes last session. We appreciate the effort made in House Bill 2164 to adjust the value of the tax credit to improve marketability. As a reminder, you changed the percentage value of the IDA credit from a maximum of 70% to a maximum of 90%, leaving the tax credit authority capped at $7.5 million. We hoped that this would allow us to raise at least $8.3 million for the initiative. In 2019, Neighborhood Partnerships was not able to sell our full allocation of state tax credit. We ended the year with 2.6 million of tax credits unsold in spite of aggressive marketing, impeccable customer service, and accepting appreciated stock as contributions. Our experiences in 2019 lead us to believe that the credit is not viable when offered at 90 cents of state tax credit per dollar received. We see two paths forward to keeping the initiative doing important work in our communities. We could make the credit value 100% and extend the marketing calendar, or we can sunset the credit and ask that we be converted to a general fund program. In consultation with our many partners across the state, we've decided on the second path. We are asking that Senate Bill 1531 be amended to sunset the tax credit. We will not open tax credit marketing in 2020, and we will work within the Ways and Means process to secure the resources we need to ensure the Oregon IDA initiative continues to serve Oregonians with low incomes across the state. This will involve both a one-time general fund request and a conversion of unsold tax credit authority to general fund resources. Once again, I want to say that I appreciate the work that's gone into helping the initiative be successful, and I ask for your support again this session by sunsetting the credit. Thank you for helping us take this next step. And I want to say, in my written testimony, I asked you to repeal the credit. In consultation with Chris, I should have asked for a sunset. So that's the official request of you. Thank you.
Thank you. So this is the reality we live in now. With that change, federal law and the IRS, and the sunset will allow carry forward as opposed to out and out repeal. So
that's
we'll
correct.
We'll get this in the
Thank bill. You. And I will certainly be speaking with all of you about other ways you can support the initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. There's no one else signed up to speak on Senate Bill 1531. So I'm going to close the public hearing. That clears us out for the week. Thank you, committee. It's been a good first week. We get back again on Tuesday. The revenue forecast is Wednesday. The House Revenue Committee will be meeting here and will be guests should you choose to attend. We are adjourned.